This episode is brought to you by Hotspur Publishing, the new publisher of science fiction and fantasy, and by Picking Up the Ghost, the new novel from Tone Milazzo.
It's basically about the business of writing, and they tell you the stuff they wish that someone had told them when they got started as writers.
You know, somebody can be a successful marketer and not necessarily provide a quality product.
I'm going to let Moses go because he's frothing at the mouth to talk about this one.
I like writing. I like reading. I like to immerse myself in books. So that seems like a pretty good career choice.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Oh, you sound terrible. What happened? I'm just kidding.
Oh, man.
And now, podstructed on a Zeppelin by an apprentice mage and delivered by rocket ship to a benevolent dragon, Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing.
Welcome to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, your podcast for science fiction and fantasy literature. This is Sean Farrell.
This is Moses Sirigar.
And this is Brent Bowen.
We have a big show for you today, including my conversation with David Bischoff, founder of Hotspur Publishing. We talk about that new publisher, and he also recalls his days writing episodes for Star Trek The Next Generation, which was a lot of fun for me as a big TNG fan. I remember from grades 3 through 8, I would come home every day after school and watch TNG at 5 o'clock. So he wrote the episodes Tin Man and First Contact, and I remember them because I saw all those episodes like 8, 9, 10 times. So that was kind of a thrill for me. We also have some news and feedback that we're going to discuss. But first, we're going to get into some news. Brent has a news story for us. And before we get to that, Brent, I wanted to mention this deserves more than a quick mention. Unfortunately, I just noticed this right before we started to record. And it's a long story explaining my internet connection, but I can't pull up the internet to look at it. But I did see that the great Anne McCaffrey has passed away. I did not see this story last night when I was on the Locus magazine. I was on there last night looking around at things. So unless I'm totally blind, it wasn't there, which makes me think that she passed away quite recently, probably within the last 24 hours. And we're recording this on Tuesday the 22nd. So obviously, she's well-known, very important to this thing that we love, literature, stories. The Pern Saga will go down in history as one of the, certainly in the top 10, if not in the top 5, of the greatest science fiction universes ever created. I'm not exaggerating when I say that. Do you think, guys? I mean, it's a huge impact. It's a changed science fiction. Yeah.
So yeah, Facebook was like blowing up earlier today. I saw so many people posting about her, you know, just talking about how her books had touched their lives, and people talking about like what a great person she was. So it was beautiful to see so much love for her all around today on the social media circuits.
Yeah. And I had a chance to meet her in 2006 at the World Fantasy Convention, just for a brief minute right before the Hugo ceremony, but she was very kind, and I did have some more time to talk with her son, Todd, and he was very gracious as well. So our best to her family and to Todd. And the great thing about being a writer is that pieces of her live on forever. As long as a book is being read, you know, she's living on. So anyway, we'll go ahead and move on with our other news story, but certainly we wanted to get that in.
Yeah, we'll definitely miss Anne, and then I was able to pull something up really quickly, and it appeared that she had been having health issues since August, and I guess she had missed a couple conventions as a result. And she had even been quoted as saying, so it's good to know that the edge was still there, even in the failing health, that sorry that old age came up and bit me on the ass. So was a response to missing a convention in August. So good to see that edge was still there. So yeah, Anne will definitely be missed. Well, it's going to be hard to even segue out of that into the next segment, but yeah. I know we've been talking about change and spent a lot of time over the last several episodes, last few months, talking about change and part of that change was the future of bookstores. And I know Moses and I had talked a few episodes back about the potential for local bookstores. And there's a story, and matter of fact, more than just a story, but the New York Times has been doing a series of pieces on local bookstores and the change in the book industry. And one piece in particular that they've highlighted is coming out in Nashville, Tennessee, where non-genre writer but New York Times best-selling writer Ann Patchett has partnered with another publishing industry pro, Karen Hayes, to open Parnassus Books. And in the article, and I don't know that I can say it any better way than this, is in the article, Ms. Patchett is quoted as saying, "I have no interest in retail. I have no interest in opening a bookstore. But I also have no interest in living in a city without a bookstore." So she is committed, in the article, talks about her financial commitment of $300,000 to make the bookstore work. They're going to focus on things that Moses and I talked about in prior episodes, and we've talked in all of us have talked about in prior episodes around really focusing on customer service, community events. If you read the article, she goes at great length about how she used her book tour almost as a research study to talk to all the independent booksellers that are making it work, and actually asking them about their physical retail space and what it will take to actually make her endeavor work. So wish her the best of luck, but it sounds like in Nashville in particular, Ms. Patchett's, you know, stepped in to help. Sounds like in the article they reference other cities across the country that, because of the borders loss, are wanting to fill that void, and they're actually forming co-ops, some succeeding, some failing. So we'll include a link in the show notes, but I thought this one success story of this one author taking it personal and deciding to give back to the literary community, I thought was a pretty poignant one.
This made me think of how I recently went up to Boulder to did a little bit of business, hung out with a friend, got a 14-hour game of Twilight Imperium 3 in, which is too much fun. But we were walking around the Pearl Street Mall in Boulder, and I believe it's called the Boulder Bookstore, is one of the bookstores there. And I walked in there, and it's one of these multi-level type bookstores. And it really hit me when I was walking around in there. I was like, oh my God, you know, places like this, we cannot go away. I was having this come to Jesus moment about bookstores. And I was like, no, this is so beautiful. I love it. I love, you know, what this is. And, you know, even a little moment of guilt there, because my Barnes & Noble is closing in Prescott, Arizona. We're losing our Barnes & Noble at the end of this year. And I should have supported Barnes & Noble more. What am I doing? You know, and
yes, this is a guy who would go into Barnes & Noble with his Kindle and then buy the Kindle version in Barnes & Noble. Yes.
This is true. But we did buy stuff in there. We definitely made a point to buy some stuff in there. but yeah, no, I can admit the error of my ways, and I am a bad person. Yeah.
and it's funny you mentioned that, because that's the other closing quote of the article, Moses, is that Ann Patchett says, "This is not a showroom. This is not where you come in to scan your barcode." She said, if you like this thing, it's your responsibility to keep this thing alive." Yeah. Was the final quote of the article.
Yeah. So before you lose your really cool bookstore in your town, don't be like me. Go out and support your bookstore right now.
This public service announcement is brought to you by Avengers and Sci-Fi Publishing. Yeah, well, let us hope that the future of independent bookstores doesn't come down to rich authors having to drop $300,000 to keep a store open or open a store, because that's not going to happen very often.
It's not, yeah.
But still, it's a cool story, and things are a-changing. And in fact, we have some feedback we'll get to in a little bit near the end of the show, where we will continue to address this topic. So, you know, we do have one last story I wanted to share before we move on to the next segment. And as bookstores are changing, publishers are changing as well. Our new sponsor is Hotspur Publishing, and it's I've seen a number of new kind of small press write-in publishing comes to mind, right? Small presses that are featuring ebooks more than anything else, maybe have paper books available as well. So the ebook revolution is enabling new publishers to come into existence that could not have come into existence beforehand. So that opens up new opportunities for everyone, for authors, for readers. And there is a new one being opened up now, and this one is coming from Angry Robot Books. They are opening a YA line, an imprint, and it is going to be called Strange Chemistry. We'll put a note in the show notes as well, so you could check it out. They're going to launch with 5 new titles at the end of this year, so it's going to happen very soon here. And then, starting the next year, they'll release one book a month for the year. Amanda Rutter, I hope I am saying her name right, will edit the line. And she was known previously for the Floor to Ceiling Books blog, and she was an editor at Maragon Books. Again, sorry if I didn't say that correctly.
Morgan Books.
Excuse me. Okay. Thank you, Moses. So a new imprint. Great stuff. More YA literature. Certainly YA is a huge genre, and as far as I can tell, just getting bigger. So check it out. Some more great new books for you, and perhaps more great interviews for us. Well, guys, I think it's time to move on to our next segment, unless you had any final thoughts on these stories.
It's a nice link with, they introduce Amanda Rutter, and it's really cool to see, you know, it talks about her enthusiasm for her new line. So I think this is going to be a really good line of YA books.
Absolutely. All right. We'll be back in a minute with David Bischoff, and we'll see you on the other side.
Sync Williams is in a haunted store about to make a very bad deal with a lunatic magician and a Loa that wants to be a god. If he knew any better, he'd walk away right now. But Sync never knows better. He opened the wrong letter. That cost him his heart. Then he hitched the wrong ride to Chicago. That cost him his fate. And once this deal is done, he's going to make his worst mistake yet. He's going to trust his father's ghost. And then he'll lose everything. I could have warned him, sure, but I'm not here to help Sync. I'm here to watch him die.
Picking Up the Ghost by Tone Milazzo and Cheezine Publications. Available in paper and electronic, wherever you buy books, online or in the real world.
David Bischoff has been writing speculative fiction since the 1970s. He worked in Hollywood on Star Trek The Next Generation, penning episodes like Tin Man and First Contact, the episode, not the film. And in addition to his many original novels, he has authored media tie-ins for Star Trek, Farscape, Alien vs. Predator, Sequest DSV, and Johnny Quest, among others. And now David has created Hotspur Publishing, where he is publishing not only his own work, but works from authors like Saul Grinnell, Captain Gerald Tug Rainey, and Susan Cartwright. So we're very pleased to have Hotspur sponsoring the podcast, and I'm pleased to welcome David to the Sponsor Showcase. How are you, David?
Oh, I'm fine. Thanks.
Now, we have to start off with Star Trek here, because as a science fiction podcast, probably everyone listening is a Star Trek fan. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your time working on The Next Generation and working on the episodes that I mentioned.
Oh, sure. Years and years ago, in fact, back in the 70s that you mentioned, a friend of mine and I, another author named Dennis Bailey, wrote a short story called Tin Woodman, and that was published in Amazing, a science fiction magazine, and it was a finalist for the Nebula Awards, and we were able to expand that into a novel, and the novel was published by first Doubleday and then Ace Books. When we found out that basically to make a long story short, we did a script version of the novel done as that we adapted the novel for the Star Trek The Next Generation, and it sold. They produced it, and they asked us to work on another episode, and that was First Contact in the fourth season. The third season was a Tin Man episode, and that's basically the story there. Subsequently, I went on to write a Star Trek The Next Generation novel called Grounded.
Yes, I read that novel.
And I had a wonderful time with that, and very proud of that one. And I also, because of my connection there, I was able to do interviews with the introductory interview, actually a feature article for Omni magazine, which was really big back in the 80s and the 90s, on the next two series, Deep Space Nine and Voyager. Oh, that was a lot of fun. I mean, believe me, going in there and working on the scripts was tense. You know, I was very nervous, and although I'd done scripts before, I mean, I had a TV background. I did a lot of cartoon scripts. The whole idea of working for Star Trek was very, very exciting, and I was nervous. But actually, going in, I was able to interview all the people for those subsequent series, and I had a wonderful time. That was a lot of fun, and I think the articles went out. But to be more succinct here, where the new development here is that we are a ebook of both the short story and an ebook of the novel. Tin Woodman is going to be coming out either at the end of this year for Christmas or next year. We're not quite sure yet.
Oh, very cool.
But that's not through Hotspur, though.
Okay.
That was basically acquired by a bigger ebook and book publisher. So, I mean, they asked about all my stuff because they basically published backlist, and I have a lot of backlist books, but I chose to hold back some of my backlist books and publish them through Hotspur, which is my publishing company.
Tell us a little bit about Hotspur. Why did you decide to put this publishing company together?
I saw a lot of people doing similar things, and I wanted to do something from a different kind of slant. And I wanted to also experiment with having more control over how books are presented. I've always had in my history of my many books, I've had no control. You know, I sell the book, I take the money, and then the publisher decides what the graphics are, decide how it's printed, things like that. So Hotspur is kind of like a fun way to do my stuff, but also publish other books that I find that I like. Because of the new popularity and availability of publishing ebooks.
I know, we're all getting in on it. I put off the e-reader for a while, but I finally got one this year, and I love that thing. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've finally gotten to the point where they're actually readable. I mean, I had one in the 90s, and it wasn't very good.
Yeah.
And you could always read text on your computer. But the key thing is that to be able to do it properly, you have to have the right lighting, and you have to have the right topography and the right way of controlling it. And they finally got it to the point where the books actually start starting to look good if you do them right. Now, that's one of the key things about Hotspur. I should also add that I've noticed a lot of the ebooks that people are doing look terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The graphics are terrible, for the covers, the covers are terrible. The copy's terrible, and I mean, it's basically not very competitive because we're used to a very, very sophisticated and entertaining presentation from professional publishing, and when you come along with basically very amateurish things like a lot of ebooks being done these days, there's just nothing that you would particularly want to be involved with. Mm-hmm. So with Hotspur, we're especially trying to make it graphically interesting and easy to read because this is something I was never into before, but I'm getting more into the whole issue of how things look. Now, I was an editor for a magazine, so I know somewhat of what it's about, but mostly I just sort of threw the stories and articles to my art director, and they, you know, would cut and paste and et cetera, back in the old-fashioned way. Nowadays, of course, you can do it all on your computer. And so as a result, you have much more control over it, and you can it's still being perfected, I think, as are e-readers. But now's the time, I think, or it's certainly, if it woke me up, it must be the time to start doing this kind of things.
You mentioned you have quite a few titles in your backlist that you'll be putting out. So I'm wondering, how many titles are you going to be putting out, and how many titles, you know, per year? What's sort of your strategy?
Oh, we haven't got any schedule. I mean, as I mentioned, the Tin Woodman, I think we might be putting the short story out through Hotspur, but the actual novel is being put out by a professional publisher named it's called ebook. No, pardon me. It's called Event Horizon eBooks.
Okay.
They have just launched their first two books, and they're very good as well. But what I'm doing, what we've done so far, as far as my books go, I've done the first book in my trilogy, my fantasy trilogy, The Gaming Magi, and that's called Destiny Dice. That's available just on Kindle right now. We just started, you know, just a few months ago.
Yeah.
And the other thing we started up is, we've done also, is Saul Grinnell's excellent novel, Freedom Club, which is, I'm really, really excited about. It's really different. It's filled with interesting philosophical questions and exciting interactions in the future society. It's just a really interesting novel. And a novel called Wolf Dawn, which actually, I don't think it's quite out yet, but it's getting there. And that's by Susan Cartwright. Oh, I wrote this novel. It's my reaction to the Twilight series. It's called At the Twilight's Last Gleaming, and it's a fun book. It's basically a YA book with vampires and werewolves. Only it's 1968, and basically werewolves are Republicans and Democrats are vampires. And Lyndon Johnson's in it, believe it or not.
Oh, I love it.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So,
and that was a lot of fun. That was the first book that you put out through Hotspur, right?
It was.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
It was indeed. Yeah. And we'll be doing more. I'm not sure exactly. You know, I mean, we're doing the other two novels in the Gaming Magi series. And we're also doing my Starhound, three Starhound books. We have one out now, which just came out, called the Infinite Battle, space opera. Not very Star Trek-y, more kind of like Doc Smith's space opera. You know, there's a lot of fun, colorful worlds and adventure, and it was fun to write, and I'm rereading them now because we're doing, Saul and I are going to be doing sequels to the trilogy, and going over that, going and saying, hey, this is pretty good. So if I say so myself, it's fun space opera. You know what I mean by space opera, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that a term? Yeah. See, I'm an old crew. I'm about to turn 60 years old, darn it, next month. And that's what we used to call this kind of stuff back when I was a teenager, when I, you know, fell in love with science fiction. Space opera.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it is called space opera still?
Yeah, it is. In fact, space opera is one of the... If you look at the many subgenres of science fiction, it seems space opera and military science fiction are the two that, you know, are doing the best of all the subgenres of science fiction.
Oh, interesting.
That's from my perspective, but
it's military in the sense as a captain of a ship and stuff, but I mean, it's not military in the sense of, I mean, there's a lot of action, but it's not military campaigns and
right.
big, you know, it's not kind of David Drake kind of stuff, or who's the other guy, David Weber. But it does have some military touches to it, I think. So, you know, if you're interested in either of those genres and you like kick-ass females, you know, the cool thing about this series is this is back in the 80s. And this is way before anyone started doing kick-ass females. Mm. And I created a kick-ass female as the hero or the heroine, or rather. She is the protagonist. Her name is Laura Shemzak. And she's part she's kind of like the Bionic Woman. Remember the Bionic Woman? Only she's especially geared to be able to attach herself to a special super spaceship. Mm. And as a result, she's conflicted about, you know, who she is and what she is. But she's also a really hot babe who can fight with, you know, one of my heroines when I was a teenager was Emma Peel from the Avengers. I don't know if you're familiar with her or not. But she's sort of an Emma Peel in space opera.
Are you a fan of Timothy Zahn's Cobra books?
You know, I have read Timothy Zahn's books, but I don't believe I've read any of the Cobra books. The ones from Daw, were those from Daw?
Well,
I think they were...
Yeah, or Bane. Bane is redid the trilogy.
I think they're originally from Daw. In any case, I have not read those, no.
Okay, the only reason I ask is, it's military / space opera stuff written in the 80s, and, you know, I'm reading it for the first time now on ebook format. And, you know, if not for ebooks, I don't know if that would have been brought back or not. I don't know. But this is such a great opportunity, this technology and the changing platforms for these books that have gone away and would have just been gone before to come back and readers can discover them again. I know Hotspur is... Well, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, I just wanted to, you know, I'm nodding my head here. Can you see me nodding my head back?
I can feel it.
Yes,
yeah.
yes. As a matter of fact, this was discussed in a panel at the World Science Fiction Convention. The general consensus was that not only were ebooks bringing back some of the older science fiction into availability, but that because books don't have to be so long anymore, they can be tighter, then they could be more adventurous, and adventurous in the sense of adventure, in the sense of plotting. Hmm. And so as a result, they can be, I don't want to use the word old-fashioned, or traditional, just, you know, actually, they're more, they're sharper, you know, they're more story-valued, story-oriented than novels, science fiction novels have developed into lately.
Right.
And that's why I think that there's more space opera and such these days.
Well, and I think
science fiction these days.
Yeah, I think that's why you see the space opera and the military science fiction kind of doing better than some of the other subgenres, because they do feature more story and characters doing things that we care about. And I'm not trying to put down other subgenres or anything, but I think people want that. You know, they want the adventure and the escapism a little bit. And then if you
exactly
can,
and the thing you have to realize, I think what we have to realize also is that science fiction is something that generally often, with all the ideas and the excitement, often appeals to younger readers. That's something I think that science fiction has lost out in this written version to media science fiction.
Yeah.
And in the written form, I think that's coming back more, and I find that the blend of that adventure kind of thing, along with the ability to expand upon the ideas, because when you have Star Trek or the other things, you have to fill it. You have a very short period of time, and you cannot devote a few pages to concepts. and ideas, as well as characterization and advancement of story. With regular science fiction, you can bring in all kinds of fun ideas and have a few pages and talk about them and discuss them, have the characters discuss them, and then have your action. You can discuss philosophy, you can discuss science. Mm-hmm. It's just all kinds of things, so you can have your cake and eat it too. So I think that's what this kind of science fiction, reading science fiction, gives to you. It's more educational. I mean, how much do we learn about science from watching Star Trek? Not much. But you learn a lot about science if you read a science fiction novel, because the people who write them are actually have background in science and can actually take some time and layer in some information.
I can't believe how fast the time has gone here. So I want to ask you real quick, though. I know you just started Hotspur, and the Kindle editions are out. I have a Nook. Do you have any idea when Nook editions will be available?
Yes, by the end of the year.
Okay, great, great.
I mean, I have a Nook, too. It's just that it's so new that we really haven't ventured much into it. And we're kind of like experimenting with, you know, spreading it out presenting the material. We're not just doing science fiction either. As I said, we're doing the fantasy stuff, and mm-hmm. I'm doing an exciting book, a nonfiction book about a guy who's dealing with. It's a picture book. It's available on Amazon, and it's about. It's called Voyage with Cancer, and we're kind of excited about that one too. So we're doing all kinds of books, but I love science fiction. And that's the focus now that we're here, that's I'm giving you here now for this interview. And you know, we're also looking for new talent, and that's a main focus. You know, we're not out to reject anybody. We're out to look for new exciting new talent.
Oh, awesome! Do you have an official submission policy or anything like that on the website?
I believe we have an email address, and you can just email and get the details. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Great. Well, the website for Hotspur Publishing is hotspurpublishing.wordpress.com. And of course, if you don't remember that, just come to our website, adventuresinscifipublishing.com, and there's a picture right there on the homepage for Hotspur. Click on that and you'll find yourself there. Lots of great, exciting titles here. I think this is great. I can't wait for the Nook editions to come out, because I want to get the Destiny dice. That looked fascinating to me. And David,
I want to send out a special shout out to our professional, some of the professional people that are involved. The graphics are being handled by a professional graphics woman named Amy Gilbert, and my old buddy Chris Lanton is doing a lot of proofreading and editorial work with us as well. I did my first novel, science fiction novel, The Seeker, with Chris, and he's done a lot of other science fiction and other all kinds of nonfiction as well since. So we're real proud of having them both with us.
That's awesome that you have a group of people helping you there. I know I used to do this podcast just all by myself, and now I have people helping me do it. And man, you can do a lot more when you have some people helping you.
Oh, believe me, it's Saul. This would not exist really without Saul, because he's kind of my techie backup here. He says, okay, Dave, you know, come out for the room, stop writing, and do some stuff on the computer. So he's helped me, you know, set things up. And Amy designed the original version of the website, and Amy did some great redesign. So it's a lot of fun. It's great. You know, that's the cool thing about being involved on the web, is that barriers to entry are low, and it's easy to use self-publishing channels. But at the same time, you have to learn as you do it, and you have a lot of chance to expand. But you can, you know, play by ear. You can do all kinds of fun, great things, and that's why it's so much fun. You know, each day you wake up and go, what can we do? And you can do basically anything. You know, it's fun, rewarding, but it's hard work. But in the end, you know, you see what you've got there, and you can actually see it. Yeah. There it is, you know, and that's, I'm sure you find the same thing with what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, David, thank you for supporting us. Thank you for sponsoring the show, and we look forward to staying in touch with you and We'll continue to talk about Hotspur Publishing into 2012. So thank you very much.
Yes. And also, I want to tell you to also look for, by the end of the year, I have my UFO trilogies coming out from Event Horizon, and my Dragonstar series, which was published in Analog with Thomas F. Monteleone, is coming out from there. So, you know, I've written a lot of books, and I'm just I've been doing other things, but I'm coming back to writing books again. So this has given me the way to do it, and I'm having a lot of fun.
And of course, you can follow David on Twitter at David Bischoff, and of course,
David F. Bischoff.
I missed that.
There's an F in there. Yes, David F. Bischoff. Yeah.
I'll make sure that's right when we put it on the website.
All right.
Thank you, David. Okay.
Thank you very much.
This episode is brought to you by Hotspur Publishing, a new publisher of science fiction and fantasy literature founded by New York Times bestselling author David Bischoff. They released their first book, At the Twilight's Last Gleaming, just this September, which takes readers to a 1968 high school production of Dracula, which happens to feature vampires and werewolves that are all too real. Other new titles include Saul Grinnell's Freedom Club, a tale set in a future overrun by consumerism, technology, and discontent, where being human isn't good enough and godlike sentient beings threaten all. And of course, there is The Destiny Dice, a yarn where demons, dragons, talking cats, and magic are the least of the perils a hero must brave on a misguided quest to save a beautiful runaway princess, praised by Piers Anthony as hilarious. Founder David Bischoff will be publishing a number of his out-of-print titles through Hotspur, as well as soliciting work from new authors. David has over 80 books published, including novels set in the worlds of Star Trek The Next Generation, Farscape, and Alien vs. Predator. He has also penned two scripts for Star Trek The Next Generation, Tin Man and First Contact. Additionally, David has years of editing experience on the editorial staffs of Amazing Stories, Fantastic, and Quantum SF in Review. To learn more and to explore Hotspur's new lineup of science fiction and fantasy, visit our website and click on the image for Hotspur Publishing, or go to hotspurpublishing.wordpress.com. Hotspur Publishing, new science, new magic, new books. Check it out.
Hi, I'm Werner Vinge, the author of The Children of the Sky, and you're listening to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing.
And we're back. Feedback time.
Our friend Emilio writes in concerning the Barnes & Noble Amazon DC Comic Showdown. He says, in part...
Wow, wow, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry.
Tumbleweed crosses the curb.
It's addictive. You can't.
You have to do it at least twice. Huh? It's like a Lay's potato chips. Can't have just one.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Well, anyway, Emilio says, one could argue the deal itself is also one could argue the deal itself is also a slap to customers, those who own competing readers. But until Barnes & Noble reacted as they did, only DC and Amazon were going to look bad. I think that now Barnes & Noble ends up looking worse than either of those two, since while the original exclusivity deal was a business decision, whereas Barnes & Noble's reaction cannot in any way be seen as anything other than a retaliation. There's no way Barnes & Noble can argue that it was a business decision. They will argue that, but it won't stand up to scrutiny, Emilio says. And I continue with Emilio's comments. As a potential customer, it negatively impacts any chance of me having any future interaction with Barnes & Noble at either their physical or virtual stores. The real villain here is DC Comics, he says. Ultimately, those other two businesses are distributors, conduits to their customers. DC should never have agreed to limit certain products to specific devices. If other companies follow that business model, soon customers would have to own a specific device for each property that they're interested in reading. I'll jump in here with a thought on this. And I haven't followed this one as closely as I think you guys have. But I'm in a situation now where Amazon is opening up to independent authors their Kindle lending library, and they're going to have this deal coming out. It's going to start December 1st. But to get in that deal, you have to have an exclusive with Amazon for like 6 months. So if you want to be in that Kindle lending library, you got to take your books off of Barnes & Noble and iBooks and all the other stores. And that's, you know, what happens is Amazon comes to you and they offer you something that sounds good. And if there's money involved on some level. And so that whoever it is, whether you're just a little, you know, author like me or whether you're DC Comics, there's that money that, they're, you know, that's sort of in your face, right? And it's Amazon offering that. I mean, and so, yeah, in a way, DC did take the offer. So they're responsible. Amazon made the offer, so they're responsible. Barnes & Noble retaliated, so they did what they did. So I think in a way everyone is not looking great in this situation. But do you guys have any other thoughts on this one?
Well, and the retaliation continues, and it's a bit of a segue into our next piece of feedback, but I just picked up today too. I meant to share this with you guys. The Penguin announced that it's suspending library ebooks, and it's it in particular, it's aimed at Amazon, and it won't allow libraries to loan any ebooks for Amazon's Kindle. Because I don't know if you guys know, it took forever for OverDrive, which is the library, the software that's used for library lending, to work out the agreements to where they could share with Kindle and with a lot of the publishers to be able to share with Kindle. And it looks like Penguin's pulling back on that. So I haven't read the story in its entirety, but it's just another bit of retaliation to Amazon and trying to kick the big boy in the shins a bit.
One little note just for accuracy's sake, because if I don't say it, someone will email me about it. Like, anyway, I'm pretty sure that the agreement between DC and Amazon was going to be limited, like 2 or 3 months or something to that effect. So it's not a permanent thing. You would eventually. Pardon?
I was just agreeing with you that it was a limited exclusive.
Right. So eventually, yeah. I don't know what the time period was. I can't remember. You would be able to get it on your Nook or your Kobo or whatever. So just making sure that the idea that you'd have to have a different reader for every line, well, that would only be if you had to read it in the first 2 months. That still doesn't change the heart of the story that we're talking about, but it's a detail I just want to get out there. And, you know, I think it's just interesting to see the reaction against Amazon, but Amazon is showing no signs of caring or no signs of slowing down, not that I can tell.
They're not, and it's affecting not only the you know, the physical bookstores, but again, in this story, it's affecting the library system. I know that was part of the promise when I bought my parents' Kindles as gifts that, oh, OverDrive's coming. You'll be able to get the library books that you want. Nope, not happening. Not exactly the way they expected it. And Emilio weighs in on similar feedback, as I had mentioned. He sent us some feedback on the future of bookstores saying, here's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see libraries supplanting bookstores. Sure, there is room for small specialty stores, especially if they are involved in the community and are integrated into social aspects of said communities. Either way, the big chain stores will be essentially gone in as little as a few years. I say essentially because they will hang on to their business models tooth and nail, but their relevance in the marketplace will decline rather rapidly. I say this because electronic readers are making headway into segments of the populations that should worry both publishers and bookstores, grandmas and grandpas. One saw the same thing happen with film. People who are not technology savvy, who are not necessarily trendy, who are typically resistant to change, recognize the tremendous benefits and ease of using cheap but sophisticated electronic cameras. And what grandma can resist having a device that can show you not just one picture of the grandkids, but literally hundreds of pictures spanning decades. We are seeing the same thing happening with readers. People embrace them the same way, and for the same reason they embrace the PC, they expand both our reach into the world and our ability to interact with it. Thanks, Emilio, for the feedback.
I think we all agree that grandmas are the problem. You know, they're gonna take the stores down because of their photos of their grandkids, and they're gonna buy these devices, and that's really what it comes down to.
Down with granny, huh, Moses?
we are anti-grandma.
Oh man. Well, to Emilio's point, my mom, who is technically
a grandmother,
she just got an iPad and has been reading like crazy on that thing. And my dad doesn't listen to the show, so I can say this. She's getting my dad an e-reader for Christmas. So soon he'll be reading too. And he didn't used to be a reader. He is now. So there you go.
Well, the one interesting thing about technology purchasing and that the older demographic, so 55 and let's say 55 and above. I don't have all the stats in front of me because some of this is what I do for day job.
Would be seasoned, not to, or
older,
sophisticated.
Yes, older is no pay term. I know it may be this data may be 3 months old, but at the time it's older than that. When the iPad 2 came out, they saw, and for periods of months afterwards, with all the competing tablets, the older generation went in to buy a laptop. More than 50% came out with a tablet device. So it doesn't surprise me. And I know some people will debate that tablets aren't e-readers, but I think the more we've been seeing the e-reader lines evolve, and we've touched on with this show, the e-readers are starting to look more and more like tablets. So that is telling to me that they're adopting that technology and will be reading books, that particular demographic. So,
yeah, I went into Barnes & Noble and played with the Nook tablet. It was pretty. It was shiny. It was light. It was fast. Sorry. Go ahead.
I've realized, like, I probably wouldn't use them for very much. You know, I'm like, I don't really need to watch Hulu, you know, reruns. And, you know, I don't really need to read magazines. But, I mean, there are people who can get great usage out of them. People with kids, you know, people who do like to play the games. And, you know, there's lots of people who can use them. But I've realized, like, the new color tablets that these guys are putting out, it's like, really? I just need my old-fashioned e-ink Kindle right now, you know?
You're right. As much as I would want the Netflix thing, as I've mentioned, I know I wouldn't have very many opportunities to use it because I have a life. So, and the only time I watch things are at night. And why would I watch it on that when I can watch it on my television or on the computer with a much larger screen? But still, I would like to have it.
Exactly, exactly. I just want it.
Yeah. Well, I do have one more email here, guys, that we got right before we started recording, so you guys haven't seen this. But it's a message from Paul. And Paul traveled to San Diego recently from work, and he's been listening to the show for a long time, so he has heard us talk about Mysterious Galaxy in San Diego. So he looked it up, and wouldn't you know it, Brandon Sanderson was going to be there that night. The one night he happened to be there. So he went, hung out, met Brandon, got a couple of signed books while he was there, and I just had a really good time, and he just wanted to say thanks for talking about them, so he knew it was there in San Diego, so he could check it out. So there you go, that ties into our bookstore conversation, and talk about a local bookstore who knows how to build loyalty and knows how to serve a need in the community. So cool, Paul. Thanks for letting us know about it. Glad you had a good time. All right, guys, I think that's going to do it for us, or am I missing anything?
Nope. Thanks for the feedback, Emilio, and we've also got our voicemail line at 619-752-4737. We'd love to hear from you.
And we'll be back in a few days with another episode, an interview with... Oh, I'm not going to tell you because I don't know. But we'll figure that out soon enough. Come visit us on Facebook and Twitter. We'd love to have you follow us there and join us there. And of course, check out our website, adventuresinscifipublishing.com, for all of our new articles and reviews.
We do have John Gerald coming up before too long. He might be that next guy. He's a UK agent who used to be an editor and has worked with all sorts of big names in publishing.
We'll see you all next time. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Please visit adventuresinscifipublishing.com for show notes, videos, reviews, and more. And email us at adventuresinscifipublishing@gmail.com. Some sound effects from the Free Sounds Project. Music by Asymmetry, found at musicalley.com. No authors were permanently damaged in the making of this podcast.